You are listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. Thank you for downloading and subscribing. Coming to you virtually live from high atop the historic Raleigh building in beautiful downtown Raleigh. The NCF&B takes the listener behind the scenes to tell the stories of the people that contribute to the creation of the food and beverage community of North Carolina. And now, the misfits in the dish pit, the faces of the front. They are Max Trujillo and Matthew Weiss.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. I am your co-host, Max Trujillo.
And I am your co-host, Matthew Weiss. And we are getting mythological on the podcast today. To brew and where to brew, that is the question. We have the Great Dane and owner, Chris Jorgensen of Norse Brewing Company out there in Wake Forest, and his noble partner and brewer, second time on the pod, return guest, brewer Brad Wynn.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having us, guys.
Welcome to the studio. It's always nice to see a couple of faces. I mean, don't get me wrong, Zoom. You guys are cool to do Zoom calls, but in person is, I think, the way it is. And if you weren't in person, your beer also wouldn't have been in person, and so that would have all been very challenging. Mm. But instead, you are here, and you brought delicious, cold, frothy beer.
They could have sent beers to our house.
Well, yeah.
I mean, if we were on Zoom still.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
A little more coordinating.
Yeah. A little bit more.
Get that delivery service.
That's there to point shit no matter what. So with that, let's say hello, and what do we say in the Scandinavian countries when we toast?
Skål.
Skål.
Skål. Skål. All right. And that is a delicious wit beer, is that correct?
Correct.
What are we drinking exactly, Brad?
So, I make wits everywhere I go because I love orange peel, coriander, and that Belgian ale yeast just makes a really nice summery beer. I love this style.
Yeah. That is perfect for the 100-degree weather that is outside right now. So a little backstory to give some reference. As Matt noted, that Brad has been on the show before. The specific episode would have been in reference to the Y Hill Kitchen and Brewing episode, because Brad was our noble opening brewer during that time. You were at Boiling Bridge, and when the Borson team and the Abernathy team came in and took over, you stayed on and then helped grow and create what is now Y Hill Kitchen and Brewing.
Love that place.
Which is fantastic. And then I remember the conversation. I guess the plan was always that you were going to do this, to go work with your good buddy Chris. But I didn't know because, no one tells me anything. And I remember getting that punch in the gut of, just so you know, I will be leaving at the end of the month or something. And I'm like, what? What's happening? And you're like, I'm opening a new brewery in Wake Forest. It's all good. It's all fine. This is all above board. This is the plan from the beginning. I'm like, what? And then I just thought, I had a Kenny Rogers through the years montage of all the times we had. That just happens real fast.
And it was fun. It was a great place to build. And I put a good guy in place for you. Greg's a hell of a brewer, man.
Greg is fantastic.
Yeah.
So that's a great way. I love that now this is just expanding the chapters of the story that is told in this community, because we have a new chapter to talk about, which is Norse Brewing. So, as Matt said, it's in Wake Forest. Maybe let's talk about that. Why'd you go to Wake Forest? What's going on up there?
Well, that's our backyard. We live there. Like 5 minutes for Brad, 8 minutes for me to get there. We found the building. We walked in, my wife and I, Jenny, and we just took one look around, and she came up to me, and she's 5'8", and she looks straight up at me and points at me and says, if you lose this, you're in trouble. Right. So I'm like, so the scene was set. This is our place. It's perfect. Brick building. It's about 25 years old, a former Italian restaurant. It'll sustain a hurricane at, high force winds. Nothing downstairs. We had to completely, build up the downstairs. It was just a walkout basement filled with dirt. And it's just what the Vikings did, right? It was all stone, metal, and wood. That's how they built their buildings. That's how they built their boats, their everything, that how they lived. And it just fit very nicely into our theme and what we wanted to do. So perfect. I mean, it's one of those things, it lands in your lap and you go, holy crap, meaning we have to do this. It can't it can't get any better than this. And
but you were looking to do a brewery, though. It wasn't like you were just randomly shopping for buildings.
Well, I wasn't looking at doing a brewery until Brad told me to. So, oh. Yeah.
Do you do everything that Brad says?
No. No, I learned my lesson.
Yeah. He's alive, isn't he?
True.
I do love how you referenced that your wife is 5'8", and she was looking up at you. That definitely indicates right there. Chris is not a slight build man. And he's also not putting on a fake accent. That is a genuine Danish accent, is that right?
Yeah, I can't get rid of this. It's here forever.
Yeah, so you are kind of that lineage of the old Viking kind of heritage. Is that kind of a way to say it?
Well, that's what is that 23andMe says, so.
I think it's pretty undeniable. I don't think you needed 23andMe to tell you that one.
Need a check.
Well, we have to get tested once in a while just to make sure you're right. But
By the way, this podcast is not brought to you by 23andMe. No,
not yet.
No, sorry. Yeah.
Send all your emails to Matt soon. At NCFP Podcast.
Yeah. If you're interested.
No, so yeah, born and raised in Denmark. I've now lived in the States most of my life, became a citizen of about 10 years ago, and love it. This is nice. Home. Yeah. This is where we want to stay. It's where our family is. Our kids are born here.
Brought you here, and why North Carolina?
Well, my wife brought me here. I met her in high school. I was an exchange student, so it's one of those things you see on movies.
Yeah, cool.
But don't really happen in real life. So high school sweethearts, yeah.
You were like the new foreign exchange student. Did you have long blonde hair at the time? And
I did have a nice mullet. Yes.
And your nickname and his nickname was definitely Sven.
Some great pictures.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Brad has seen the pictures.
Great
it's all
pictures.
Good. But yeah, so we met in California where my wife's from, and then we moved around. We Seattle, Connecticut, Virginia, and now here. And that's all through work, just corporate jobs I've had. Came here, met Brad about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Something like that. We hung out. I like beer quite a bit. Well, it's a Scandinavian trait, I think.
Yeah.
That and schnapps, and pickled herrings, but he didn't have schnapps or pickled herrings, so I stuck with the beer. And one night we were sitting on our back deck, and Brad came over around 3 o'clock. He had just done some nice beer. He had bottled a bourbon barrel tavern ale. I love that beer. And
that's a good one.
He brought over a six-pack or two.
Yeah.
And by 6
that
o'clock.
Was yeah. I was going to say, that was gone by like 3:45. Well,
didn't have a chance.
I think by 6 o'clock, we had already opened a bottle of Basil Hayden, and we were done with the beer, and we threw some steaks on the grill, and we kept talking. And a little later at night, Lynn, his wife, and Jenny joined us, and we sat and talked.
And we opened another bottle of Basil Hayden.
And the girls were drinking wine, and they can hold their own when it comes to number of bottles.
Oh, they're good.
So I think it was like around 1:30, something like that. We're sitting talking about what do we want to do kind of when we grow up.
And, yeah.
You know, Brad has always wanted to do something like a brew pub. So we talked about that. I've always, at some point in time when our kids were through college, my plan was to get out of the corporate job and stop traveling so much. And it would just be Jenny and the dogs and I. I could do whatever I want, consulting job, who knows, mow lawns. But then Brad goes, well, why don't you just build me a brewery?
Mm.
And Jenny's like, okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then they call their daughter, come pick him up because they're responsible like that. And got home. Next morning we woke up. Jenny and I looked at each other and she goes, did we just agree to build a brewery? And I said, I think we did. And she goes, should we? And I'm like, well, you know, why not? And she likes people. I mean, not that I don't like people, but I like drinking along with people. But so that's how it started. And that was a little over 3 years ago?
Yeah.
So. And so how much longer after that did it take you to actually look for the building?
Well, we started looking at breweries that already exist.
Okay.
Or existed. I mean, so we looked at about 11 breweries ranging from kind of the North Charlotte area all the way out to the coast. It's amazing when you start asking questions, everything's for sale.
Yeah.
Right? But the numbers just didn't add up. And we knew we wanted a retail place. Most of the breweries around here are all, you know, distribution breweries. So the model itself would have to be changed significantly.
Mm-hmm.
The equipment that they had at that point, I mean, a lot of them was very old. We had to do a lot of upgrading to the equipment. So we actually looked at a building to lease down here off of Glenwood. And I got on the phone with my attorney and good friend. And I told him about this building and the amount of money that we would need to, you know, put up to get the lease. And he goes, are you an effing idiot? You know, do you know what you could do with that money? I mean, you can buy your own building and you can pretty much build this thing, you know.
To spec.
Yeah, exactly the way you want it.
Yeah.
And you would own the land, right? He said, so I'm like, well, that was the kick in the butt that I needed.
That's a good perspective to have.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And that's why I love him.
Lawyers, every now and then.
We're going to need that lawyer's number after that for future references. Yeah, well,
it also takes a certain bank account to be able to buy your own building. So everything is.
Oh, that again.
Well, he mowed a lot of lawns.
He mowed a lot of lawns. He's gotten really good at it.
Yeah. Are you still doing your corporate job? Or
yes, I am.
You are?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm lucky. I mean, I work in the pharma industry.
Okay.
So, this whole COVID world, everybody's moving home, working from home.
Yeah.
And my job is what we do, the company I work for, it's booming. It's doing great. We got a lot
Have you found a vaccine yet? Is it they work on a vaccine or what?
We work with clients that are doing that. Yeah. So so that's great. I mean, that's a good feeling in and of itself, right? To do something good for humanity in general. So
yeah. You know, Chris, it just and Max, you know this, like it just speaks to that you're obviously intelligent because everybody in the wine business that we talked to, and if you remember when we had Roy Cloud and Mike Daniels from Vintage 59, you know, I kept asking them about the business aspect of wine, and they said, you know, Matt, basically, if we wanted to make money, we would have gone into pharma, you know. But you're kind of doing it backwards. You made your money in pharma, and now you're doing a brewery. See.
Yeah,
that's the way to do it.
You got to have fun with that money.
I think we're having a lot of fun.
Yeah,
and
it's great.
It's been great since we opened our doors, except for that little, you know, what I said, like 9-week stint where we had to close down or whatever that was. That kind of sucked.
Oh yeah, that part.
But, yeah, but
so you know. Being that because you opened in what, December of last year, is that
December
right?
19. Yeah.
So it's a large facility, as you've already mentioned. I mean, Brad, you were saying 5,000 square feet on each floor. It's two floors.
We got 8,500 square feet total. So yeah.
Wow. Okay, and then so close, and a big outdoor. Beer garden as well. So,
correct.
So you have a lot of space, which is conducive to the normal climate of or the current climate of what's going on right now, as far as being able to go out and all. But being that you were able to kind of build to spec, as Matt said, we can't anticipate that there was going to be a pandemic at the time. But by virtue of the space, it has kind of worked in this new modern business plan. I'd venture to say, like. People are comfortable going out because they can actually enjoy your beer outside at a safe distance and kind of go from there. Would that be fair?
So we have a nice front porch where we took out half the tables, right? So you have we actually have 8 feet between our tables. You know, you got to be able to move your chair in and out, right?
Yeah.
So so people love that a lot because it does, you know, being outside, a little different safety factor than being inside.
Yeah.
Right. We have a nice deck in the back, about a 550 square foot deck out in the back coming off the upper level of the building.
Right behind the brewery.
Yeah, right behind it. And then we have down in the parking lot a 1,500 square foot tent. So all in all, when we are less than 50% seating capacity inside because we had to also meet the 6-foot standard.
Yeah.
But by having the outside seating and being able to put that tent up in our own parking lot, benefits of owning your own land, right? Yeah. We were able to only lose 20 tabletops. So that was, you know, that's really good. And people love it. We have people, guests coming in that are like, oh my God, I'm so worried about this. Me and my husband, we're afraid of it. We don't want to be, but we want to go out. And we heard good things about Norse. They'll call us up and Jenny or Lynn or Jeannie or Evil Twin, my wife's twin sister, they will put them down in the corner of the tent, right? So there's a fan down there, nice little table. They're sitting away from everybody else. And every people that have those, you know, needs and wants, we can oblige that. It's cool. Good.
Let me take a quick break just to talk about one of our sponsors of the show. That is Folks Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit that is there to be champions for all good things crafted in North Carolina and the folks that make them. Whether it's supporting our podcast or their general store that they're going to open soon, or even their new North Carolina-related cocktail bar called Tonic, Folks Foundation is always doing something to support artisans in North Carolina. They recently created a compilation vinyl album called the Carolina Quarantine Project, where Carolina-based musicians and duos showcase songs that were written while sheltered in place. Their album is on sale already. It's on their website. You can go to folksfoundation.org and purchase the Carolina Quarantine Project. Know that all of the sales go directly to the artists that supported it, so you are helping to push forward the artistic movement in North Carolina by supporting the Folks Foundation. And read the Folks Journal that comes out quarterly. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And we should also mention that...
Welcome back.
Welcome back to Hungry Harvest.
That's right. Hungry Harvest. Save a trip to the store and get fresh farm produce, kitchen staples, and pantry items delivered right to your doorstep starting at just $15.
Yeah, Hungry Harvest creates weekly variety boxes of healthy produce, packs them up in their facility right here in the Triangle, so they make no-contact deliveries directly to your door with their team of local drivers.
Yeah, and not only is it affordable and convenient, it's a convenient way to keep yourself stocked up on healthy foods. It's a great way to make a difference with your grocery dollars. Because every time you receive a harvest, you're contributing to fight against food waste and hunger in our community.
Every delivery saves at least 10 pounds of food from going to waste and supports the work of local hunger-solving organizations like Interfaith Food Shuttle with their produce donations.
When you sign up, your participation also helps others that would like to have some great, fresh, healthy food as well. So sign up at hungryharvest.net. Don't forget to use the promo code NCFB30 for 30% off your first harvest. That's hungryharvest.net.
All right, gents, let's get into beer. And so let's try another one first. But tell me, I always want to know what's like the style and the signature beer. If you had to explain Norse Brewing Company in one beer, like what would be the signature beer that you would give somebody?
I don't know if it'd be a single beer. It's like picking your favorite child. That's, I can't do
that.
Well,
we all have it.
We know. I want to know who that is.
Everybody has one, but you can't say it. I mean, you know that. No, what we do is really solid beers. So if you're going to come up and get a wit beer, if you're going to come and get a Danish-style lager, which we're getting ready to make also, then you're going to get one that you recognize, and hopefully it's the best that you've had in a long time. I had brought a brown ale with me. I was kind of known for that at a brewery I was at before. And I just made this one bigger and better. So
so this is a brown ale we're drinking now?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I think Chris is pouring a Hefeweizen, so we went from a wit to Hefeweizen. I've also brought English-style brown ale, and I brought a West Coast IPA.
So I don't know. I think I pretend like I know something about beer, but I humbly do not know shit about beer. I just know the names. What is really the difference between a wit and a Hefeweizen? Because aren't they both wheat beers?
They are. And a wit usually has unmalted wheat, and it also uses Belgian ale yeast instead of a Hefeweizen is going to use a German ale yeast.
Okay.
So they lend very different flavors. They are similar, but they're different. They're kind of same family flavor.
Yeah.
And then a Hefeweizen usually does not have orange peel or coriander. Which, you know, was kind of made famous by Pierre Salas. He's a little coriander in his wit beer, and it just, you know, it really sets it apart. Hefeweizen you're going to see is very clovey, and there's just a real, you know, the esters are what give it the flavor, the interesting flavors. So
yeah, there's always like a little different. There's almost, I found like in Hefeweizens, there's always like a somewhat of a tropical note, a little bit of fruit tropical,
always.
Like banana.
And
that's from the esters.
Definitely
right?
A little banana in this one, yeah.
Cool.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Refreshing. This is the type of beer you want right now.
Totally.
Yeah. I remember Brad was throwing down some pretty awesome, there was the mango Hefeweizen that you were doing.
The mango. I love that beer.
Which Greg has humbly tried to recreate.
That's good.
Yeah. Because it was one of those things. It's like, okay, you get a new brewer in. Just like, you know, a new chef comes in, they want to like do their own menu. They want to do whatever.
But gotta put your own spin on it.
But you gotta like also preserve the brand in itself. And you know, opening up at Y Hill, we had that mango Hefeweizen, and everybody loved it. And it's
big seller.
So then it's like, I think it's cool that Greg looked at it as a challenge. It's like, okay, I can't do exactly what Brad did. I have to do what Greg's gonna do. But I also can't make it so avant-garde weird that it doesn't taste like the original version. So I think he's doing a good job, but man, this is tremendous.
Thank you very much. The yeast does all the work, so.
What, yeah, right. So well, what? I actually see Brad working when I do go into the brewery sometimes. So.
This old, oh, you do?
Yeah, I do.
I haven't seen that. I know.
This old man can huff it around. So.
What is the yeast that you use?
So a brewery that's pretty famous for its Weinstephan, and I was really lucky. When I got into brewing, my first brewery, brewmasters there were not really in touch, and kind of learned at school in Chicago. And then my second job, I got to learn from a German brewmaster, and I got to spend a few months with him. And he primarily made two beers all his life. He made Hefeweizen. He made a Dunkelhef, and he made a regular Hefeweizen. And he got pretty good at it because 30-some-year German master brewer. And I was lucky enough to work with him. He taught me how to make lagers, taught me how to make some ales. And he worked at Weinstephan also, so he was a consulting brewer for them. And he turned me on to this yeast, and I still use the same yeast, and I ferment the same way he did, and I make my mash the same way he did, because it all makes a difference, and it lends the flavor profile that you get. It's not, you know, everybody's like, oh, Hefeweizen's easy. It's not easy. It's actually a beer that takes a lot of time and a lot of effort, especially in the mash and the fermentation. So,
do you buy that yeast, or do you cultivate it at the brewery? Or
I'm buying everything now.
Okay,
I don't really have a lab just yet. I was actually looking at microscopes yesterday. I mean, I have a pH meter and some things, and I'm running blind as far as yeast goes. So I'm pitching fresh yeast. I'll pitch one or two off of a beer that I've already made. But without being able to look at it under a microscope, I don't feel comfortable. So we're not streaking anything up right now.
Right on.
But, we will.
But that's cool that you can get the exact same yeast that
it's
this German brewmaster is doing.
Okay. Yeah, it's a very widely used. You just have to know how to use it. Yeah.
Gotcha.
You know, I watched recently, just because I'm a big fan of beer and I'm a big fan of Stone Brewing Ale, I watched the Beer Jesus documentary, which I don't know if you guys had seen that. It's streaming on Netflix. You guys could watch. But it's the Stone Brewing CEO, Greg Koch, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, is that how you say his last name? Koch? K-O-C-H?
Or Koch, yeah, I'm not sure.
Koch, maybe, yeah. So, but his whole thing was that he's an American going to Germany to create Stone Brewing Company in Germany, which is kind of like
in Berlin.
How dare you? Like how dare you do that? But in reverse, you're kind of doing, you know, obviously it's not German, but like you're taking these Northern European stylings and coming to America and kind of holding true with that and trying to kind of have an old world sensibility with your flavors in an area, especially in North Carolina, which is widely now recognized for great local brew. But I love that because initially when I first moved from California to North Carolina and I singularly thought about the beer, I had said to my wife, I'm like, you know, the beer is all really good, but it's similar to itself. Like most of the breweries, I feel like they're using all the same ingredients. And so there's the variety isn't as wide as like what I knew in California. Like there's some very dynamic breweries coming out in California. That was 7 years ago, though, and things have upgraded and changed through that time. So now, like, you could go to Norse and get a style of beer that is not similar to, say, you know, some of the local guys in the area that are doing great beer as well. And I applaud you for that because everyone tries to do something a certain way, and then you find that you're like, oh, we're all just kind of doing the same thing with just a little lilt of a change. But this is nice because, I don't know, maybe in your words rather than mine, how would you explain the difference between like an old world sensibility of beer to what we consider like a American craft beer?
Well, like I said, that the guy's name was Franz Beck. Franz made two beers all his life,
that's just...
and that was it. And I was in Berlin. I didn't get to Stone, but I got to some really great breweries and some great brew pubs. And those guys, there's a lot of young brewers that are doing what we're doing here now, and they thank us. I'll be honest, because we revive styles. You know, I'm in Berlin, but it was hard to get a Berliner Weiss, so you can get that here in North Carolina, and a lot of places, including mine. So, you know, we do whatever we want. For God's sakes, we're Americans. So, you know, and it makes it good for us, though. Again, I had another friend of mine who I worked with. He came here from Germany. Now, he had American parents, but he grew up in Germany. And you know, he's going to run a filter all his life at Augustiner Brow or something. And he just was not up for that. So he came here to have fun, make great beer, and, you know, get in on what we're doing. And when I first started brewing, I don't know if I was being looked down upon, but they're like, you know, the Germans and the English. I had another English brewmaster friend of mine now who was like, well, you know, Americans do all the same stuff. It's just, you know, it's going to be a strong beer and it's, you know, over the top. And it's not true. We make, I think, the best lagers in the world. We make the best everything in the world. And we just, because we can do and use whatever we want. There's no limitations, no nothing. I take a lot of, creative license from friends of mine. I love seeing what they're doing. I love going to breweries, and, you know, there's some great ones around here too. Yeah. There's just such good breweries within a, you know, short distance of Raleigh. It's fantastic. And in Raleigh, some great breweries.
Well, it's like, you know, if you grew up with a very strong, long heritage of family with generations upon generations, you would have this tradition, and regardless of making beer or anything in your life, just even just your own way of life, you have guidance because you've had your forefathers and mothers before you that kind of just said, like, this is the way it's going to be. But Americans are kind of like orphans, and so we're learning all of our mistakes as we do it, but in the end, we're all kind of doing the same thing, but it's just like, hey, look what I just figured out. As opposed to the Europeans going, yeah, we've been doing that for 400 years.
And we learn from the Europeans.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, I'm doing lagers the way that I was taught to do lagers, and I was taught by a German brewmaster. So
yeah.
I take a lot of what he taught me, and I keep that. I've made some changes along the way. I mean, you have to learn and get better every day, but a lot of tradition is stems from these European traditions. So,
but I'd like to know Chris's point of view on that, being that you are from Europe, from Denmark and all, and you grew up drinking beer in a certain styling. How have you adapted to American beers, and where does that fit with Norse?
First off, I think I've adapted pretty well.
it's doing a hell of a job.
It's my Untappd account tells me so. Again, yeah, I know I shouldn't be plugging that in, but I did anyway.
No, please. Not a sponsor. Yeah.
But, you know, growing up in Denmark, first of all, you're supposed to be 18 when you drink, but you start a lot earlier, and it's typical. You sit around the family table, and you have your, you know, big cold table to store kolde bord, right, where you get all of your different meals and your different. I mean, you go through basically a 3 to 4 hour course of like 8 or 10 different like meals, all sitting in one. A lot of beer, a lot of schnapps, and it's all lager and pilsners.
Yeah.
You get into the seasonalities, meaning you get into the Christmas season, gets a little colder. You get porters. Those are some good ones in there as well. And then you got your Christmas beers. But for me, it was always Tuborg or Carlsberg. That was it. It's kind of those were the big ones. Nowadays, when I go back, there are a lot of like smaller craft brews, and you can get those. And it's popping up more and more. My cousin, who came and visited us for the first time a couple of years ago, he's like ever since he goes out to every single craft brew he can find in Denmark, because we took him around to a couple of places over here and he got hooked.
Mm.
And he will sort of send me texts and go, hey, I had this porter with a little bit of licorice in it, like salt licorice in it. It was really good, right?
Yeah.
So I think even Denmark, you know, my home grounds are kind of adapting to people wanting something different and not just the same two styles of Hefeweizen or lagers or pilsners, right? So I think overall, and I travel throughout the world, it's changing. The beer industry is changing across the world because people want something more exciting. And a lot of people want IPAs. And so I have a buddy of mine that I work with who lives in he's Danish but lived in Munich for a while, and every time I would go over and work in Munich, I would stay with him and his family, and he's like, oh, can you just bring some IPAs over, because I can't get him over here. And he's a huge fan, and now they're starting to actually have him. And last time I went, you know, he's back in Copenhagen. Last time I went over there, we went out to a couple of breweries in Copenhagen and had some pretty good IPAs.
Yeah.
So,
which is funny, because I almost feel like Americans have adopted IPAs as their own, which obviously, if you know like the history of the name IPA, it was based in Europe, but from England more.
It is,
yeah. India Pale Ale.
For the whole travel of.
Yeah, they had to hop the heck out of it so it would last the trip. So,
yeah,
but which wouldn't go bad by the time they got to India, yeah.
Which was really just a funny excuse to just make higher octane beers. It's like, I'm going to need this to be a little bit higher.
Well,
more alcohol, more hops.
Yeah. But, you know, that I wanted to get into that for a second because Copenhagen is like now considered one of the food destinations of the world. And so that would make me think, oh, yeah, there's probably some radical stuff going on there in all types of culinary aspects, from food to brewing and stuff like that. Do you get a chance to eat in Copenhagen a lot?
I do. Yeah. That's why I try to stay when I go. And
right.
So they say there's an old meat market that has like it's just a bunch of restaurants in an old meat packing plant on the harbor, and they now put in some breweries in there, and so I go there and hang out, and you can kind of say, okay, I want a sandwich here, and then I want a hot dog here, I want a steak over here, and each one has different beers. Either they bring in, they're buying from elsewhere, or they brew themselves. So it is really, I love Copenhagen. It's great. That's the place to go if you're in Denmark.
Yeah.
Everything else is pretty much the country. And
Noma? Have you been to Noma?
I've not been to Noma, but I did read an article on them that they changed to now be a burger place. So during the COVID times, everybody could afford to eat there.
So we were just talking about that on last week's podcast about how burgers are pandemic friendly and really working there.
Chris over at Postmaster might have a lawsuit that he could file against Noma. You hear that? Government cheeseburger. We thought of it first, Noma.
Be an interesting international lawsuit, but
I don't think it'll go far. But he can try.
We love our football lawsuits.
What's the food situation over at Norse? What are we talking about?
So the menu we set out to do was like Nordic food, but with a southern flair. We still have a fryer, even though I tried to get rid of it.
People love their French fries.
Oh yeah. And we got some pretty good French fries. I must have to admit that. But it's very much we try to take kind of the Danish style. Mix in some California thinking, right? Especially with the sourdough that we get from Union Special, meaning Andrew makes just killer bread.
Yeah.
And so we got open face sandwiches, our smørrebrød, which is what it's called in Danish, and so those are going very well. We got some pretty good salads where you can also take the same fixings as what you have, like the shrimp salad on the smørrebrød, the egg salad, or chicken salad. You can put that on top of your like Norwegian blue salad, a wedge salad, whatever. So you can mix it up.
Yeah.
And you still have it's a lot of the recipes or some of the recipes are from, you know, my grandma.
Yeah.
So we got our frikadeller, which are Danish meatballs with a goat cheese gravy and lingonberry jam on them, and they're really popular. Of course, we got a pretzel, and we make our own beer cheese with the Brad's Delicious beer. And, you know, if we gave people a straw, they would just live off of the beer cheese. And then I think the best seller that we have is actually the Viking burger. So we have a burger that's a blend of four different meats. It's Wagyu beef. It's elk, it's boar, and it's bison.
Whoa.
And you put those things together, oh boy.
It's really good.
It sounds really awesome.
Yeah,
it's lean, I imagine. It's not like super
It actually
fatty.
It is. Yeah, you got to know how to cook it. There's a lot to it. It's a great sandwich. It really is.
Yeah.
Wow. So who's heading that up and what's going on there? Like, who's in charge of all the food?
We've got a guy, Tim Weber, and his buddy Drew. They're... you know, when we got started, we learned a lot. We're not restaurant people. But I did learn a lot at White Hill, I will say. Watching you set that up and Bobby and then getting Kyle in and Kevin, I was impressed. It was really cool. And I hung out a lot around you guys. I hung out a lot in the kitchen because the food was
easy,
fantastic,
Brad.
Too.
Max's NCF&B hats are not going to fit very well anymore. Well, so just let's take it easy a little bit.
I do need a hat.
No, I know how good
anyway,
I am.
Yeah.
But, no, I said them wide.
Well, so. I love restaurants, and it's not the only person I learned from. I've been around them a lot, all my life. I came in with a lot of food knowledge. And because look at me, I love to eat. We got started. It didn't go as well as I had hoped, and we're quick to make changes if we need to. We're not going to just float around.
Not everyone expects to eat at a... And like a beer garden.
And right? A lot of people come in and go, didn't know you had a restaurant.
Right.
So that's our marketing problem. But I'm proud of our food. It is so good right now, and our kitchen is just killing it. And, you know, I've got some guys that are very humble, they, you know, I love our menu. It's really different. I did not want to come in and just do another brew pub, you know, with sports on the televisions. That's just boring to me. I want an atmosphere, and atmosphere, you know, atmosphere is everything. So we are all about comfort. You know, we're beer, family food. It's so important to us, and I think people come in, and I want to exceed your expectations. Everybody does. But the main thing I want to exceed is I want to make you comfortable. I want to make sure you come in, sit down and go, you know, feel familiar and family and just, you know, that was good. And that's where our food kind of landed. And I did not want to be a burger place, but guess what? I'm doing burgers and fries a lot. And it's okay. Ours are really good. And I have elk sausage. And, you know, we try to do some gamey stuff and you know, I fucking plug a friend, B&W Hardware just gave us some smokers and we're smoking our own, you know, pork belly, and we put that in a lot of the dishes. Oh, wow. And it's great. It's really good food. They've really got a handle on it. They're barbecuing and smoking and doing some great stuff. And I got a big grill, big, beautiful grill Chris bought us when we first got started. And we inherited pizza ovens and we have a great kitchen. It's really cool.
Sounds pretty awesome.
It is awesome. You got to come check it out.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so, as far as back to the business side of things, and I think Max and I are both always intrigued by this. Like, so you said in the beginning, your intention was to do retail, meaning that you do not want your beers in distribution, or you'll do that, but that's not your main focus.
Eventually, we'll probably get into that. I think when you kind of look at how breweries are set up, they serve a certain local market,
mm-hmm.
right? That's where your regulars come from. And one of the things that we are learning now is we opened like 3 days. We already had regulars, so that was great.
The first 3 days,
right? They'd been there 6 times in 3 days, right?
It's amazing.
Lunch, dinner. So
it is crazy,
but
in a great way.
Oh yeah, it was awesome. Still is. But so for us, we kind of looked at we should be able to draw from within a 10-mile radius of where we are. And people further away are only going to come once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks. But people closer are going to come closer, you know, every 2 days, something like that. So we are seeing that. So if we will eventually start getting into like bottle shops or other restaurants, but kind of out in that 10-mile perimeter.
Yeah.
So that'll help us extend a little further out. So people come into a bottle shop or they come into a restaurant, they have our beer and they go, oh, this is really good. And they look up Norse Brewing Company, they'll come up because we want to become a destination, right? And we are seeing that that's happening. People will come up, they'll bring their dogs, they'll, you know, walk around downtown Wake Forest, they'll end up with us and they'll just sit around for, you know, 2-4 hours. We had people come in at 11:30 Sunday. They didn't leave until 7:30. Right, and there was a group of six that just sat there all day, grazed throughout the day.
Squatters.
They had two meals. It was great.
Yeah, it was great.
That's all right, yeah.
And people come back and eat lunch and then dinner. So it's not terrible.
So that's kind of what we wanted to create. And,
yeah.
And if somebody comes and says, hey, I want to buy, you know, 20,000 barrels of whatever a year from you, we'll certainly look at it. We can't produce it out of the place we got now, but
right.
Meaning if a business opportunity presents itself, we will, of course, look at it.
But if not, that's a sustainable business just within the 10-mile radius focus and getting enough people based on what you, I mean, obviously in a global pandemic world.
Yeah. Well, that kind of.
Kind of puts a little check in the armor.
And as a single location, yes.
Okay.
We're actually doing really well. We started out unbelievably well. This, you know, the virus sucks. It sucks for all of us. We're in a lot better shape than a lot of friends are. So we are very lucky. We opened back up when we had the opportunity. We trying to keep it as safe and clean and sanitized as possible. But, you know, we're restaurant people. Chris is a farm industry, and it's nothing really new for us. You know, I've been washing my hands all my life, so it's new
right,
for
as
some
a brewer,
people.
You have to keep your facility clean.
And I
clean,
like
yeah.
food, yeah. So I've been in the food industry for a long time, so
yeah.
Washing hands is a big deal. But we've been really lucky, and we know that, and we're very appreciative of that. I have a lot of friends that are not so lucky right now, and I'm hoping they make it because there's some really great people. You know, this industry brings in amazing people. It is just great from food, beer, wine, alcohol, the liquor part of it. We have it all. I love everybody. It's just so cool. And to see, you know, the struggles right now is kind of tough. So
yeah.
I'm hoping we get through this stuff. And
I mean, not to be like totally off subject, but current events, Matt texted me the storyline last night that Danny Meyer and all of his restaurants, it's a, not that you guys would know, but we've been talking about this on the show for these past few episodes about how employees get paid and is it fair and what's the distribution of wealth inside the business. And Danny Meyer Restaurants, I guess he decided to do away officially with the no tipping aspect and go back to the more conventional way.
I've been seeing that.
Where he is, you know, just pricing out his menu accordingly and then relying on the generosity of their guests to tip and basically fund their employees. And in the article, he had said, he's like, well, right now,
people are tipping very generously.
Yeah, there's money being left on the table if we didn't ask for the gratuity to come through. And because of this erratic amount of flow of business, like, you just don't know. Tomorrow, everybody could just stay home, and then the next day there could be outpouring of people. So almost like you got to get it when it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, that's crazy because we look to guys like him as leaders in this industry, and when they're even like, man, we gotta rethink this again. And it is weird though, and just like you talking about the hamburgers and talking about just whatever, I feel like everybody goes back to the most basic of all things, and those are the things that that do well when there is chaos out there, right? And so, like, a hamburger, a beer,
it's true,
pizza, yeah, barbecue,
meatloaf, you
bet.
These
are all the things that, like, we've noticed through the analysis of interviewing people through this pandemic, that those are the businesses that tend to do well. Mm-hmm. And also where people feel comfortable, you know. It's like, yeah, I can I've always gotten my pizza delivered, you know, or I've always been able to go to a place and grab a burger, and you know, and you're not gonna pull that pint of beer out of my cold dead hands.
No way. You know? It's the comfort thing, you bet. We're all about it, man, trust me.
Yeah. And we haven't talked about this or whatever, so I'm not putting you guys on the spot, but are you guys doing more of a traditional method as far as like staffing and labor model and all? Is it just what you would kind of expect, and are the servers and the staff being compensated fairly and all?
I think it's good, actually. You know, there's competition everywhere, and there's competition for our employees also.
Yeah,
we haven't really lost anybody, and they know what's out there. Some of them are working at other places, you know how that goes, and you know they need two or three jobs, especially right now. So I think you know, it's our customers and our guests really that are the driving force. So they're the ones that are keeping our employees happy as well. We just try to provide a really safe place. We try to give them something cool to sell and try to make sure that everybody's comfortable. But our guests are killing it. And it's, you know, just I love that Danny Meyer can do what he's doing. And, you know, he is a trendsetter and has been for some years now, probably over 20 years. But, you know, in certain cities, we're in a small city. We have to go with what the customer wants, because I don't have a huge pool of people.
Right.
So that was that, you know, do you want to be a burger and fry place? No. Do I want to be a retail shop? Yes. Especially given the climate, you know, trying to sell beer at the supermarket right now is not easy. Even though sales have kind of gone up for some people because of this, you know, people want to take some beer home. But sustainably, with the big guys and the way, you know, InBev's kind of pushed everybody to the curb and bought a lot of big breweries, and you know, people like Stone are like, you know, we're not selling, and I love that sort of thing. You know, the independent thing is a big deal for me. But if you do sell, way to go. You know, make your money. I got no problem with that either.
My bachelor party at Stone Brewing Company, just so you all know.
That's nice. Pretty cool.
Three-day bachelor party. North San Diego.
That's pretty cool.
And Greg Beer Jesus was the guy that gave us the tour. He, when we walked Beer out Jesus. Of the limousine, he handed us growlers with like a necktie, like a
bolo tie,
like a press pass. What do you get, like when you get a backstage?
Media pass, like a
lanyard. Yeah. He handed us these lanyards with big clips on the bottom, and we're like, "What's this?" He's like, "Oh, it's for this." And he hands us a growler full of the double barrel Arrogant Bastard, which was like 18% alcohol because it was like rested in Jack Daniel barrels beers. Yeah. And he's like, "There you go." And he just handed like the eight of us that come pouring out of the limousine, which we already had like a beer or two in there, and just clips it onto our lanyard. And we're just hanging like this heavy beers around our
neck. That's great.
And we just took a tour and did whatever, and pretty amazing. That was back in their first brewery, like the teeny tiny one before they even moved to Escondido. And then since, and then now they're in Virginia.
And he's a marketing guy. guy, man. He is good at what he does, that's for sure. Yeah. And they hire good people, so.
So with the retail element, you're not canning right now, right? Or
no, we're not.
That's not a thing. That's, you know, we've discussed that too. Canning is cool, but canning is expensive, and there's not a lot of profit in canning. So it's more of just a marketing endeavor if you do canning, unless you do it to a point. To a very high level.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah, but you can't casually can.
You've got to hit some numbers to make it worthwhile.
Yeah. But you can get a growler or so to take home. Is that
we do have growlers. Yeah, I'm not a big fan, but we do definitely have growlers to take home.
Why is that?
There's just a lot of waste, and it's not the best way to enjoy beer, but it works. I'm going to be a little bit of a snob right now. Drinking at my bar. That's the place to drink it. And we'll get you home. We'll get you an Uber if you need it. But just drink one or two also, and you can get home. And I do a lot of, I do some strong beers. I do some pretty light beers, too. So
you just made me think.
The gamut.
What if, with this whole, home, ordering system and all that, what if, Uber made a deal with a local brewery or so, and you could just tack on your Uber onto your bill, and it was all connected. The advantage is if you ordered your Uber through Norse Brewing, you would get a deal on the drive.
So we actually tried that. So you know when you go again, I said earlier I travel a lot. So when I go to larger cities around the world, you'll actually see an Uber sign hanging somewhere. It's like a pickup spot.
Yeah.
If you go and get picked up there, you get a discount because then all the Uber drivers can hang out. Yeah. Just like the old taxi cabs hung out, right? And just in long rows and waiting for rides. So we contacted Uber and said, hey, what if you put that? We'll put that in front of our building, put a little sign hanging off our awning there, and people can just get picked up. And that could be the spot for downtown Wake Forest.
Right.
I'm like, no interest.
Not yet, at least.
Well, not yet. Let's see. We'll
after this episode, they'll be like,
there you go. Listen up, Uber.
And this guy can build some businesses, so it's got to be a good idea.
Back to the beer for a second.
Yeah. What
you just poured us something. This is which one's this?
That's the Duggle Bunny.
He's pouring you an IPA, or he poured us an IPA. So kind of West Coasty. It's got some malt flavor to it. It's got some beautiful American hops. I love this beer. So there's some Amarillo, there's some Belma, there's some really interesting hops in this beer. It gets heavily dry hopped, but I try to keep it. I want all my beers to be balanced. So there is some malt backbone. A lot of guys, I don't blame them because I like drinking them too, but they try to make that, the base as light as possible to put sugar in there and keep it as light as possible. I want you to taste malt. I want you to taste hops because I think they go great together. I can't get away from that malt flavor. I love it. So.
And are you working with Carolina Malts?
I do. I have them for a little bit. I love them. That's my favorite maltster right now. Yeah. And the Carolina Gold is my favorite malt I've ever used. And I've used German malts, English malts, Belgian malts, French malts, everything in between, Canadian, mostly Canadian American. And Carolina does an amazing job.
Yeah.
I'm tasting and it's awesome. It's a savory thing. It's almost like a chivy thing that I get, and it's awesome.
It's the hops.
Okay, so this brings me again to are we still at the point? I know there's a couple people doing it on the East Coast, not very commercially successfully, but hops are still pretty much almost exclusive on the West Coast. Is that right?
Well,
as far as growing them?
No, yeah, as far as growing them.
You can get hops in North Carolina and Asheville.
But North Carolina grown hops.
Yeah, it's tough. And, NC State did a lot of research, and we were there when I was with another company. We were with them and going through some of the trials. I got to know a lot of the people that work for State, and they were doing some really cool studies, but one of the studies that came up, and a lot of people from Virginia were coming down, and we were in a lot of seminars and drinking a lot of beer and talking about growing hops, and the one thing they came with was, I'm getting a pound per plant here, I'm getting 3 pounds per plant in the Asheville area because the weather's just better for it. And in Idaho they're getting 6 pounds per plant.
Sure.
You just can't compete.
Yeah.
Now if you pay a little bit more, you can get some locally grown hops, and they are good. There are some really, actually great hops grown in North Carolina. Just from a competition level, I've got to imagine it's kind of difficult.
Yeah.
But there are some decent hops around here. There's some malt grown in North Carolina that's really good, too. North Carolina is not the only maltster, but I love them. They're really good.
That was the same argument for where I grew up, and to some extent, a lot of East Coast wine, there's some good wine out here, but the properties are so closer together and the land is so much more expensive, especially like out from where I'm from on Long Island, that the wines are of good quality, but compared to a California wine, where you could pay half the price for it and you get the same quality. Yeah, so
the juice isn't worth sometimes the squeeze.
That's the problem. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah, because I've always was told that like wherever you could grow pot, you could grow hops because they're kind of in a similar growing
same family.
But we also have tons of marijuana fields out here for CBD purposes. Lord knows, I was there with Mr. Nick Sagan, former guest of the show Flat River Infusions, on Harvest Day, which was insane to just be in a 6-acre field of just marijuana plants, but they were all 100% CBD, you know, they're all whatever. But just being there, you're like, what the heck? And you're seeing everybody just like the reaper coming in, taking out all the plants and chopping them. But unique environment, but not common, you know, like, it would probably do best to just replace that with farmland or you know, put RTP's next to pharmaceutical lab right there to make more money for the land.
We do want our farms to continue the So then, you know, a lot of the tobacco farmers were getting off of tobacco, so they've done a lot of stuff in North Carolina, a lot of trials, and we'll see what happens. You never know, but right now I don't know how cost effective it is.
Well, that'll just change the whole definition of making local. Truly local beer, right?
Yeah, well, you can.
But it would be a lot more expensive.
Yeah, you can even harvest yeast locally. I mean, you can get wild yeast here, too. So, and that's kind of fun also. But it's a lot of work. So,
I imagine making beer in this new facility has got to be a nice upgrade. No offense to the old Boylan location.
It's a little different.
Wild's got a little tiny old school brewery. I mean, it chugs along and makes some decent beer.
You can make good beer on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and they were told you couldn't. And then I got there. I was like, well, they shouldn't have told you that. I'd like to meet who said that. But we got there. That's an old system. I actually used an old system like that at a brew pub that I was at. I didn't really brew at it. I just kind of oversaw production there. But we made good beer there. We made, I think, great beer at Y Hill. Very proud of what we did there. I just had some of Greg's beers. They are excellent. So he's still making really good beer there. But I have a really nice brew system. Chris knows a little bit about production, a lot about efficiency, and he looked at me when we were parsing the system together, and he's like, why don't you want the, because I was just going fully manual, he goes, why don't you want automation? I was like, I don't want to spend all that money, and he goes, let's think about how much time it'll save you and what the cost is on that, and we started breaking things down, and I have a pretty automated system now that is really nice. It makes really good beer.
Yeah, so what's the size of this? Like, what's the...
7-barrel, same thing.
7-barrel system.
I love 7 to 10 barrels.
Yeah.
This is my dream job. I'm going to be honest. I've run big breweries. All along the East Coast. I'm very proud of where I was at. I like the production aspect of it. But if, you know, what do you want to do? You want to serve people, be with them, see them, eating and drinking with them. You're immersed in the whole situation. This is what it's all about. I can make whatever I want. I can buy any ingredient I want because I'm selling everything by the pint right now. This is exactly what you want to do. Yeah. If you're a brewer, this is what you want.
Yeah.
It's like in a kind of romantic way of looking at it, it is more of a European way of life of thinking.
You bet.
I say this, you know, I've said this maybe before on the podcast, but my wife and I were in Spain on our honeymoon, and we were right on the water. We were in Cadiz, and we're having bocadillos, little sandwiches, right? But we bought them a block away from the ocean. Right on the ocean, right, like looking at the water, there was a guy that just was selling sliced jamon, you know, just like really great Iberico.
Sounds ham. Great.
It was amazing, but it was like, it was just the ham. And if you wanted to get, you know, like some bread and some cheese to go with that ham, you had to walk a block up to the other side. And the guy overhears me just as like a restaurant guy. And I'm telling my wife, I go, you know, if he just bought some bread and just bought some cheese, he could have all these bocadillos right here on the corner. You'd no reason to walk up there. The guy overheard and goes, but we're not doing that because this is what I do. And I went, I mean no disrespect. He's like, you Americans, you just figure like, I can, like, let's just do whatever we can to make whatever at a dollar and this and that. And I looked at him and I'm like, yeah, but what's wrong with that? And he's like, because that's what this guy does. And I go, yeah, but there are a lot of guys in our industry that do something well but don't understand the full idea of it until someone else figures it out. Like, this is how to do it best. And he's like, yeah, but that's not what we do. I sell ham. And I mean, there's an argument for both sides, right? But I do like the idea that, like, even at Norse, even if this is it, let's just say this is everything you'll ever do with the brewery, you are making your own beer, you're making your own food, you're providing an environment for many people to come in and enjoy and sit there for lunch and dinner for 7 hours and just do that. And Brad's working in a brewery where he's something he's always wanted to do, and he's got like a sense of accomplishment in doing that. I think the American way is always like, yeah, but what's next? What's next? What do we do next? But there is some comfort in saying, no, this is what's next, is this life, what we're doing and how we're doing it.
It's also comfortable to set a base and know that base is sustainable. Yeah. We do want to grow. If you're not growing, you're dying. Yeah, you got to enjoy it. Yeah, why do it? Yeah, especially what we do. Yeah.
Well, I will tell you, if you do want to grow and get in distribution, our friends at Triangle Wine Co. are opening up a shop in North Raleigh in the Bedford area, which I'm not sure about the mile radius to where you are in Wake Forest, but it's certainly a lot
it's
closer.
Pretty close. Yeah.
So maybe we could talk with Chris and get some Norse Brewing Company beers into Triangle Wine Company, which, by the way, is a sponsor of the show and a great friend of the show.
And a great company.
And a great company. Yeah. And they have a great selection of beers, a great selection of wine, vermouths. A lot of your beverage needs you can get there, because they will deliver wine or beer to your house, or you can get a curbside delivery. They're putting COVID packages together, meaning you give them $100, tell them what kind of wines you drink, and they'll put it together for you and bring it out to your car, and voila. And they do also sell proof alcohol ice cream.
Yeah, think differently about your dessert. Get proof alcohol ice cream with 7% ABV in every single pint. You can get flavors like bourbon caramel, coconut rum, apple pie moonshine, and many others. They are at all of the Triangle Wine Companies, but if you yourself are not in a convenient area where Triangle Wine Companies are located, you can also probably go down to a place that is more saturated in the area, like a Harris Teeter or a Lowe's shopping center, and you can find that beautiful red freezer in the beverage aisle of your supermarket and get proof alcohol ice cream there. So,
got
so
proof lastly, in the freezer.
We've kidding. Got this last beer in front of us. Explain this one before we close it and make it a day.
So we've run through our European and American choices, our American style IPA. Now we're in a kind of a Southern England brown ale. Mm-hmm. This is what I first learned to make when I first started brewing. Had an English brewmaster and had some really nice recipes. And this is a beer that I really latched on to. I made this in North Carolina when I first got here. It's still a big seller. It's still keeping a brewery I was with in business. And I've improved upon what I've learned and the malts that I can use, and it's a little bit bigger. And I just love this style of beer. This is a dark ale that you can drink year-round. It's caramely, it's chocolatey, it's got some nut flavor to it, and it is just a great beer. Beer style. I'm not saying I'm in a great beer, but I love this beer, and it cooks well. So when we're braising shoulders and we're doing some other things, or we're cooking down some short ribs, we use this a lot. So
nice.
Because it's not bitter, it's got those caramely flavors, those exploded proteins. I love this beer.
I was going to say, my reference for this beer, and sorry if this is an insult, it'll just show my naivety when it comes to beer, but this is like, style-wise, I think of Newcastle Brown Ale.
And you should.
Yeah, okay. But this is like a lot softer and more elegant style of it, like you were saying.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it's a bigger beer, too, but we give it
like
time.
Like alcohol-wise, it's bigger?
It is. It's 6.5%.
Okay.
But to get that malt flavor that I wanted, I'm one of those guys. I don't care about IBUs. I do not care about alcohol percentage. I think my customers should know so they can make informed decisions. But I'm more about making beer and getting a flavor that I'm looking for. And it just so happens I needed that amount of malt to get these flavors that I really like through a lot of trial and error. I've been making beers like this for a long, long time. So, and I just like, this is that balanced beer.
Mm-hmm.
Balance between malt and hops and just drinkable. I love drinkable beers that you can have a couple of.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it took Brad a little while to get to this one. So, because during the COVID shutdown, we were able to, you know, silver lining, we got to find it in everything in life, right? So we spent the time actually brewing and get caught up and get all our tanks filled. And then he made Fat Thor, which is our stout, and with a pH, by the way.
Nice.
So he comes in to me. He goes, I really wanted to make the brown ale. And I go, why didn't you? He goes, well, I used all the chocolate chips.
Chocolate malt.
Oh, chocolate malt. I'm sorry.
That's
yeah,
good.
And then he threw everything in Fat Thor. Fat Thor is great. It's good beer. You can even drink a stout in summertime. It's nice and actually light, but very dark and tasteful. And like, well, let's buy some more so we can get it. So he finally got around to buying some more and made. I love this beer. That guy's beer. That's the guy.
Oh,
right?
Man.
It's awesome.
Yeah, Brad's always had a group of loyalists to your beer that were, you know, that would come over at Wyho and Boylan before that. But
it's true.
What I remember good most people going and fawning over more than anything were your darker lagers and your kind of classic kind of European style. So it all just makes sense that this is where you have positioned yourself and where you're at. I like that you're making what you want to make. And Chris, I love that you were able to bring what you grew up with to us. You know, it's bringing culture to the area, and we need more of this in general. It's like we need to hear and see the expressions of what people have understood and loved for so many times in their neck of the woods, wherever it may be. So that's a really awesome connection, and that's great that you were able to open and do this for us and in our community.
And also, like your native country, rising, which is good for my business, the per capita alcohol consumption, you know. So I think Denmark is the highest per capita consumption in the world, or up the top five.
Really?
We got to be good at something.
Yeah.
Well, and I would lay a bet on that, knowing this guy.
When it's dark in the wintertime for like 16, 18 hours a day, what the hell else you
like,
do, right?
When we lived over there, Jenny would get up in the morning at like 8 o'clock. It was dark. Right, she would ride her bike to school, and it was still dark. And she would get in the classroom, sun starts coming up. By the time she leaves at 3, sun's down, it's dark. She's like, what the heck happened?
It's depressing.
And she's from California, right?
Yeah.
It's like sunshine all the time. And it's like rain, you know, wind, uphill both ways, of course, right? Snow, and it's just,
But the opposite, in the summertime, you have like 18 to 20 hours a day.
The longest
crazy.
Day, the sun never goes down, right? So, yes, alcohol is a big part of our life in Denmark.
Thank God.
It's great, yeah.
Well, thank you guys for bringing it, like Max said, to North Carolina. And for those of you out there, head over to Wake Forest and get some Norse Brewing Company beers. If you go there, you will eat and drink very merrily.
Thanks for listening to the NCF&B podcast. And if you've stuck with us this long, review us on iTunes and remember, 5 stars are encouraged.